Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Now, Kieran, full disclosure here, I think we've known our listeners well enough to be honest with them that we had a very long pod on Monday. It's a long and interesting pod. Today's is going to be shorter, for want of a better word, because there isn't a better word than opposite of long is definitely short. I'm trying to think, I should know more words than that, Kieran, but let's go with shorter. Today's is going to be shorter because for logistical reasons we are having to record just before the England game against the Czech Republic. So there's no point hanging about, Kieran. Let's just do yes, no answers and then get on with hoping that England, who for some reason have lost more players than Scotland due to the Scottish player having this car. Still trying to work out how that happened. Basically, unless it was a Scottish player's cunning plan, like saying to Billy Gilmore, just go and have a, see if you can kiss Harry Kane. Go on. get a couple of them knocked out. So yes, we do have a news pod for you, and there is news, and we will deal with all the news stories as fully as possible, bearing in mind that it is now 58 minutes before kickoff. So, Kieran, our first story. The organisers of the failed European Super League, they really will not let this go. They believe a modified version of the competition will happen in the future. And to be fair, Kieran, I think you've said this right from the get-go, that somehow, in some way, shape or form, this competition will happen somewhere, even if it's over a weekend in July. But it's no surprise that three clubs, at least in the European Super League, are failing to bow to the inevitable.
Listening to what we are hearing from Barcelona, Real Madrid and Juventus, they still think that this franchise is the saviour of football.
Yeah.
And the comments that football cannot survive in its present form. Well, it can. And you know, the talk that Generation Y are not interested in football simply doesn't hold water when you do a proper analysis. What these three clubs want is more money because they've been run poorly financially and they saw Super League as a way of digging them out. However, if we take a look at the formal position with regards to the Premier League clubs, they are still shareholders in the European Super League company, which has been set up in Spain. And therefore, conceptually, they are still members of the Super League, although they're certainly not doing anything to promote it. And the claim that there is no mechanism through which they can terminate the Super League relationship appears to be a bit of a sticking point. And I suspect this is a fantastic opportunity for anybody with a silver tongue, because what Real Madrid and Barcelona are trying to do is to extract money from the other members of Super League as much as they can to cover up for the fact that those two clubs have been, run in a poor manner historically. Arsenal have formally said, we are in the process of withdrawing from Super League, but we've got to go through the right hoops. And Manchester United have said that the comments which are coming from the Super League people are deliberately to mislead fans, and Manchester United want nothing more to do with Super League. So the noises from the Premier League clubs appear to be pretty unequivocal. But there's still a lot of politics taking place behind the scenes, and the Super League have applied to a court to determine whether or not UEFA and FIFA have the exclusive rights to organise football competitions. They will try to cite precedents with other sports. And if that is the case, then legally it does leave a door ajar. But I think it would be suicide for the English clubs in particular. There's no appetite from it in Germany to even be associated with this in any way, shape or form. given the hostility that already exists.
You know, I was thinking about those Generation Y comments the other night, last night. We've already told people we're doing this on Tuesday. I don't think many people in Denmark would agree with the notion that young people are not interested in actually attending football matches, because that remarkable atmosphere in Copenhagen seemed to me to have been produced mainly by young people, to be perfectly honest. And what a fantastic football occasion that was. Do you think, Kieran, there is a chance that Real Madrid, Barcelona and Juventus will almost have to end up, if necessary, playing against each other every year in a kind of bizarre home international type tournament, simply for their own sense of pride, basically? Or do you think they will, or will they look to maybe ask other clubs at a lower level to join a Super League?
I think clubs at a lower level would be lambs to the slaughter if they did join. They might get a bit of money, but they would become pariahs locally. They would purely be doing it for money. And it would make a mockery of the competition.
Right.
So I think that would be a struggle. There is still the outstanding position of UEFA, who appear to be going to have some form of sanction against these three clubs. They've given the other nine clubs fines, but nothing that the clubs can't cope with. If these three clubs want to remain in Super League, and there's nothing to stop them from doing that, of course, I can't see how they can play in both the Super League and the Champions League. So that would be very difficult. But if UEFA's sanctions are that Barcelona, Real Madrid and Juve are going to be subject to a 1 or 2 year ban, then they could become sort of a glorified Harlem Globetrotters playing each other two or three times a year just to bring in a bit of extra dosh. But who's going to take those matches seriously?
Eric Alonso? He would definitely take it.
Yes.
Up. It did cross my mind that if Real, Barcelona and Juventus had to ask other clubs, it could be some consolation for beleaguered derby fans after a terrible couple of years if they found themselves invited into a Super League, which Eric Alonso claims he owns the rights to. Speaking of derby, I don't know if they're one of the clubs in question, but it says here on this script that Guy sent me, and I haven't had time to write out because we are now 48 minutes away from kickoff. Several championship clubs are still working under a transfer embargo.
Yes, that this appears to be the case, and we did discuss this a month or two ago when the EFL appeared to put clubs into some form of embargo, and the reason for this is that they hadn't submitted their accounts, even though Rishi Sunak had said, as a result of COVID, you've got an extra 3 months to submit your accounts. So
yeah.
Since then, I think Huddersfield, Birmingham, Coventry have all addressed that, and therefore they're out of the embargo. One of the clubs that appears to be still in the embargo is Reading. Now, whether this is to do – well, this isn't to do with them not submitting their accounts, because if you take a look at Reading's accounts, they're god-awful. They're just terrible. We talk quite often about overpaying in terms of wages. Now, if that happens – in 1 year, you say, well, that's not too smart. But if we take Reading's accounts for the last 3 years, they've generated total revenue of £53 million and paid out total wages of £113.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's just consistently being bonkers. So they appear to be under some form of embargo. It is rumoured that Derby are also under an embargo, but I think that's for non-submission. What does the embargo mean? Again, we're not getting anything, and perhaps perhaps I need to hold my hand up here. The EFL did send out an olive branch a few days ago. Perhaps I should have replied and said, could you clarify the position? Negative mark for me on this one. It looks as if the clubs that are subject to these sanctions, they cannot sign players for fees. they've effectively got to have, you know, one out, one in. So they're looking at Bosmans, they're looking at Freeze, they're looking potentially at loan signings. And wages, and we won't be getting out a big violin for this, wages appear to be capped at £600,000 per annum. When you're recruiting. Now, for some clubs in the Championship, that would be substantially less than the average wage. I know that we've seen Stoke City have just sold a player to one of the promoted clubs for around about £14 million. I think his name's Collins, and they're recruiting somebody on a much lower deal. So that's an issue. It could, however, cause quite significant problems for some of these clubs, because trying to get a balanced squad when you're under an embargo is quite challenging. And I think that Reading presently have four defenders in their squad, some of the other clubs are down to what is sometimes referred to in football as the bare bones in terms of squad size.
Are these bonkers wages that Reading are paying still a hangover from their two seasons in the Premier League? Because otherwise I can't see any excuse for why they would be doing so.
No, it's they're well beyond that. All of the players that are now in the squad have been recruited since then.
Yeah.
They've had owners who, I think, tried buying promotion. I don't think is the appropriate way to describe it, but they were certainly keen to get promotion, and they invested heavily in the squad with players on 3 and 4 year deals. Now, that gives you a hangover. That's the problem. And that hangover has lasted for longer than Reading would have quite liked. Based on my figures, the average wage in Reading is around about £18,000 a week. And that's a lot for a club that hasn't really troubled the scorers significantly, but In 2018, they spent £19 million on players. Last season, in 2020, they spent another £16 million. They have certainly invested in talent. It's just it's not turned into results.
Well, also, traditionally, I mean, when they've been in the Premier League, they sell out every week, of course, but they struggle to fill that stadium in the Championship. So they can't even argue that they're able to pay some of the wages through gate money, can they?
Yeah. I mean, I remember going to Elm Park to see a match. And that was actually quite a good atmosphere. But there's something not quite right about the Majeski in terms of generating noise. But perhaps that reflects on crowds which therefore tend to have fallen. Certainly in terms of their match day income, in 2017, it was £9.7 million. In 2020, yes, there was a COVID impact towards the end of the season, but it was down to 3.6. So, you know, a very significant fall in the volume of ticket sales, which hits clubs in the Championship that much harder, especially once you've run out of your parachute payments, because you then become far more reliant upon the turnstiles to generate the money to cover the costs.
Yeah, that jazz club they've got generates a lot of noise. None of it you want to listen to, but I always think you're in a hiding to nothing as a football club if you get a new stadium and it's got a jazz club in it. Never mind. That's for another pod.
I always think of the Fast Show as soon as you say jazz club, though.
There's another game taking place tonight, Kieran, involving Scotland playing Croatia. And SPFL clubs have taken out £25 million worth of loans from the Scottish government. Is this across the entire league?
This is in respect of the SPFL. They're pretty generous loans. They're 20-year term loans, interest-free, and repayments don't start until 2022. So they are designed to give clubs breathing space. They're not flat amounts. I think Rangers have taken out £3.2 million. One of the other clubs has taken out a bit more than three. Celtic haven't taken any at all, but Celtic did have quite a lot of cash in the bank. And as you can imagine, that has resulted in a bit of bifters between both sets of fans on social media. But if we take a look at the other divisions, to be fair to the Scottish government, they've given grants as opposed to loans £500,000 for clubs in the Championship, £150,000 in League One, £100,000 in League Two. So that's actually quite generous. So the Scottish government is trying to support football as a sport. The UK government, the English government, has not given that type of support to professional football because it said you need to sort out, you know, you get your own house in order, pointing to the level of yeah. revenue which is generated in the Premier League. Therefore, of course, in the Premier League, it gave out grants to clubs in Leagues 1 and 2 and has guaranteed loans for Championship clubs.
Yeah, and I imagine £100,000 for a League 2 club in Scotland is a substantial amount of weight off the shoulders, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I've got a huge amount of admiration for the lower league clubs in Scottish football because they almost universally set themselves tough budgets and try to live within their means. So they weren't in as precarious a position going into COVID as some of the clubs in England because if you've got poor finances, that means that you are very poorly prepared for any potential economic shock. And Scottish clubs, I give them a lot of credit for the way that they keep within their limits.
I had one of the happiest days of my football watching career, Cowden Beef versus Queen of the South. It's fantastic. I love Scottish football. This story, Kieran, is one that we have been keeping an eye on, but it's one that's taken quite a sinister turn because seven people have now been charged with electoral offences by police investigating that missing £10.25 million loan to Northampton Town Football Club. Now, you've been saying for a long, long time that there was something suspicious. Have you got a hamster going around on a wheel in the back of your hat?
Finley's got a new squeaky hamster. it's a squeaky armadillo.
Of course it is. What else would a dog in Sussex have other than a squeaky armadillo?
He's very, very happy.
He's squeaking it in rhythm as well. So is he cross because I mentioned jazz and he's now proving he's being jazz dog? Yes, this story, Kieran, you thought, you know, in your water and by the pricking of your thumbs some time ago that there was something wrong going on here. And this is clearly serious stuff going down here, Kieran, isn't it?
Yes, the police investigation into what's been happening at Northampton Town, and for people not familiar with the story, many years ago, Northampton Council gave a £10.25 million loan for stadium development. And they thought they gave that money, they fought in good faith. And then a couple of years later, the contractor said, we've not been paid. The council would say, we should have been paid. We gave the money to the club. So that money has mysteriously disappeared. And some of the people involved, so we've got Anthony Cardozo. He's been declared bankrupt. Howard Grossman has had a 10-year ban from any involvement being on the board of a company. So these are pretty bad sort of civil issues. The council has spent £2.3 million on an investigation trying to find out what went wrong. And what went wrong was they didn't do any checks and balances. Yeah, if somebody walks up to you and says, give us a load of money, and you give them a load of money, to a certain extent, more fool you. So then we say, well, how did this get through the system? And the latest charges are in respect of political donations to Northampton South Conservative Association. Now, people are perfectly entitled to give donations to political parties. Mm-hmm. However, if you give more than £500, you have to give your full details as to your background. So, political donations take place all the time from a variety of sources, and it looks as if these donations could not be traced to the actual donors. So we now have these people being charged by Northamptonshire Police. It doesn't reflect well on the people involved. Quite working out the links to the £10.25 million loan isn't clear, but there does appear to be a sort of a big pot of concern swirling around, and how it's directly linked to the loans, we will find out in due course, we hope, although this, I think, has still got legs. The council have said the total losses to the council are £17 million. It's just not just the loan and the investigation, but the lost interest on the loans itself, and of course the policing costs, and it's just swallowing up more and more of the public purse at a time when local government authorities are short of dosh.
And of course, there's always that worry for Northampton fans, even though they were the people that had no involvement whatsoever in taking out this £10.25 million loan. They could end up being the people that are punished for it by point deductions or whatever else, and that leads us to Swindon Town, and I have to say I admire their increasingly bolshy approach. Swindon Town's official supporters club says it will no longer directly support the club financially until either communication from owner Lee Power begins or an alternative party takes over. Now, are they, by saying they will no longer support the club financially, are they saying they will no longer go to games, or is there more impact than that they could have?
No, I think it's more in the case of holding functions, giving short-term loans, from what I can make out. However, there are a lot of people within the Swindon Town fan base who are taking the fan power, not Lee power approach, and effectively replicating what we saw at Blackpool Football Club, where they had a boycott of the club. There are still outstanding issues with regards to season ticket rate refunds for 2020-21. Lee Power has not been forthcoming with regards to that. So fans don't know where they stand in terms of the money that's due back to them. Should they be paying for a season ticket for 21-22? It's just very poor all round. And at the same time, there is an ongoing High Court case involving a guy called Clem Morfuni. And he presently owns, what we can make out, I think he owns 15% of Swindon, and he was trying to get Lee Power to sell him the remainder. And it looks as if somebody has dropped a clanger in the Lee Power camp. Clem Morfuni put in an offer for the other 85%, or the other 85% of the shares, and the judge appeared to say, "Well, that offer cannot necessarily be refused." So we're awaiting to see developments, and certainly, we've got lots of friends at Swindon, and they are keeping us up to date with this as much as possible. So Lee Power has made an error, which could have opened the door to a takeover. Whether that can be forced through could lead to more legal costs to get this actioned. But there certainly are the prospects of changes afoot. And if that is the case, then I'm sure the supporters club will be only too glad. Clem Morfuni, he's spoken to the local press. He's spoken to local fan groups. He does appear to be a person who wants to engage. And it doesn't matter who you are in football. If you don't engage, if you take a arm's length approach to fans, that can come back to bite you. You've only got to look at what's happened with the Glazers and Manchester United, with Daniel Levy and Spurs fans, that they were prepared to tolerate so much, but you make one big mistake and you're in it up to your elbows.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
If Lee Power had sent a little tweet this time last year, even in the middle of the pandemic, if he said, look, we can't meet for obvious reasons, but ask me some questions and I'll do my utmost to answer you them honestly, even if you don't like the answer, probably wouldn't be having this discussion now. And there are very few other businesses where owners have such contempt for what basically are customers. I hate the phrase. I used to hate the way that Simon Jordan referred to Palace fans as customers. But if you want to treat fans as customers, then treat them the way any other business would treat their customers. Answer their concerns, answer their complaints. Don't ignore them. Because then fans will get angry, and fans will put words in your mouth, and then fans will want somebody else to take over the club. It's like he seems to be getting everything he deserves, and it would have been very easy to avoid that, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes vanity and ego override common sense, and that appears to be what's happened here.
Yeah, there's been a lot of times in my life when vanity and ego have overran common sense. just sometimes for half an hour, vanity and ego buys you a lot of fun, and common sense can kick in afterwards. You may have noticed I slowed down towards the end of that speech about Lee Power. That's because the cat came in and walked over the keyboard, causing a completely different email to come up, which had nothing to do. I really can't ask you the next thing that was on that email. It's back. Hurrah. 40 minutes talking off time. Barcelona. We talked the other day in relation to a question that we had about Barcelona and Real Madrid's finances and whether fans should be worried. And you said no. And I take it that's still the case. But they've taken out a €525 million loan to help make payments for past transfers and pay player wages. That's interesting because we've had several questions over the last year from people who support clubs that Barcelona haven't paid money for when they bought players in. So are they being forced to do this by UEFA, Kieran, or are they seeing the light and deciding to do the decent thing?
I think this is as much to do with pressure from banks rather than UEFA.
Oh, okay.
What's happened with Barcelona is it is a club that generates huge amounts of money through the stadium itself because it is so iconic. You know, first of all, you know, when they have a home match, you're generating €4 to €5 million at a piece. Yeah. It's got the museum, it's got the conference center, it's got lots and lots of ways of bringing in cash. And of course, all of that has been unable to proceed as a result of the pandemic. But Barcelona were not run well prior to the pandemic, and their new president has agreed with that, and the finance director has said, we've got to hold our hands up, things weren't great beforehand. But of course, that allows them to blame the previous management, so that in itself is not unusual. Barcelona had taken out some short-term bank loans, and they were reaching the point at which payment was due. So therefore, they've got into an agreement with Goldman Sachs to take out this long-term loan. It's a 15-year loan at 3%. So what this will do, it will give them some breathing space. It will allow them to settle some of their football debts, because if you have outstanding football debts, then potentially they could have been subject to sanction from UEFA. So I think that issue could now be dealt with, as well as dealing with some of the effectively the credit card debts that they were running up. And the other thing which they need to address is, of course, their wage bill. And that they seem to be trying to recruit players on free transfers, but they do have a lot of big money players. And we're recording this on the 22nd of June. In 8 days' time, Lionel Messi's contract expires and nobody knows what's happening.
Mm.
And you know, that's a contract which, you know, the total cost is somewhere in the region of 60 to 80 million a year.
Yeah, a couple of seasons ago, a friend in one of my Palace WhatsApp groups went to Barcelona and sent us photographs of the Barcelona trophy room. It took 15 photographs to get the entire trophy room in. And then 3 days later, he went to Selhurst Park and he sent us a photo of the Palace trophy cabinet, which wouldn't have even taken one photograph, except he got a bloke to stand either side to take up the whole picture. It's slightly embarrassing. There are some strange goings on, Kieran, with an Asian gambling company called HTH, which appears to be claiming to be an official Euro 2020 partner, much to the surprise of UEFA and Euro 2020 and all the other partners.
Yes, and big thanks here to some of our Price of Football listeners, because they put me on to this story. They know who they are, so our thanks go to you. So there is this company called Hua Ti Hui, apologies for mispronunciation, and Hua Ti Hui are now Manchester United's official gambling partner, for which they will have paid a significant amount of money. But there was no big announcement from Manchester United.
Sorry, Kieran, their official gambling partner in the Far East or in a particular company?
I think it's the official global gambling partner.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
This seemed a bit strange because normally Manchester United are very, very good at announcements. And their prior global gambling partner was a company called Yabo. And then when you look into this, if you go to the Manchester United website and you click through the links to HTH's website, it says website under construction. Now, that's the type of thing that I associated with 1995 and the internet starting up.
Yeah.
Because how long does it take to put up a website? It takes, 2 or 3 days. So that seemed very odd. And then I got in conversation with, some of our friends in the Far East, and they said, "Well, have you seen this?" And they sent us a picture of Harry Kane and the sort of the Euro 2020 logo, which appeared to infer that Hua Ti Hui are some form of sponsor of the Euro 2020 event. But if you go onto the UEFA website, nothing to be seen. So I think it's what's referred to as a white label gambling organization. So we're not quite sure where it's based. There has been talk about perhaps being in the Philippines. And the advantage of this is that the gambling commission, they can't got their hands on it directly. They've also sponsored, it would appear, Wolfsburg, Lille and Milan. So you might think, well, hold on, this company clearly is a lot of money. So is there anything to worry about? And I don't think there's anything to worry about. I'm sure they paid these people. But you then start to do some more research. And a couple of years ago, there was a company called 1xBet, which, again, based in the Far East, and it was the sponsors of official gambling partner of Spurs, Chelsea and Liverpool. But then all three clubs terminated the deal because it turned out that it was an unlicensed gambling organization. And, unlicensed gambling organizations, my Uncle Terry might say, have ways of getting money to families.
Yeah.
And I'll say no more than that. So it's just difficult to work out what is taking place. I did drop a line to United. They said they'll get back. They'll take a look at this. So it just makes you feel a little bit uneasy. And I'm also surprised at United, who are so professional in the dealings with their commercial partners, that they would let themselves get into this situation, which could turn out. It could turn out to be fine, but it could also turn out to be a bit messy as well.
Yes, what was that phrase you used recently? Blinded by the check, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, and Uncle Terry was a one-man unlicensed gambling operation, I understand, as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, apart from when money had to be collected, where sometimes he brought a couple of his mates around to help him.
Yeah, well, he was a very fastidious man. Didn't want to get his gloves dirty, did he? And you say it takes 2 or 3 days to put a website up. Okay, that's interesting. I've been asking Ed to finish mine since before lockdown. He says it takes. months, Dad. Just give me. Got to get the pictures right. Speaking of UEFA, our last two stories are about UEFA, which is germane, really, because we're about to finish to get off and watch the game. UEFA, thank the good Lord, have dropped a planned investigation into Germany captain Manuel Neuer wearing a rainbow armband during his side's Euro 2020 matches.
Yes, and this is a strange one, you know, because we do have the Rainbow Laces campaign, mm-hmm. and you know we've seen the likes of Jordan Henderson, Joey Barton, many other players sort of standing up for homophobic issues, which have historically surrounded the game at times. I'll hold my hand up here. I'm a Brighton fan. We are known for having a big gay population in Brighton, and going to away games at times can be a bit unpleasant. Having to put up with somewhat tedious chants, tedious comments. I can cheerfully ignore because if somebody says we can hold you. We can see you holding hands. My standard reply is you're just bi-curious. take it like that. But Manuel Neuer decided to wear the armband. It is Pride Month, and that's great, highlighting the issue. I know I've just been working on a documentary with one of the broadcasters where we've been looking at the issue of what happened to Justin Fashanu in terms of his career and how he he tragically ended up taking his life, and he used to play for Brighton. He used to actually come along and coach our supporters club, and he was just a fantastic bloke.
He was
friendly, he was engaging, he was so supportive, and he made us better footballers. So there are issues of that nature to have to deal with. UEFA initially said, well, we're not happy about this, and then changed their minds. And then today, and we're recording this on Tuesday, the mayor of Munich said that we want to light up the Allianz Arena in the rainbow colours. Mm. And UEFA said, no, you can't do that because you're playing Hungary. And Hungary's president, Orban, has just brought in legislation where any mention of people being gay is now banned in education. Is banned in all books and in all teaching. So it does appear to be not only autocratic, but also a bigoted dinosaur. So UEFA has prevented this from taking place. It has suggested that they light up the stadium on another date, because what the Munich mayor is suggesting, and here I think it's Dieter Reiter, is a political reaction to what's been happening in Hungary. And at the same time, UEFA is investigating Hungary for homophobic chants in the matches which have taken place in Budapest to date. And we've also seen Mexico is being forced to play its next two games behind closed doors because of homophobic behaviour by fans. So, there's been so much progress in many aspects of football, but this one seems to have come to an end in a pretty poor manner.
Which leads me directly onto our last story. And I want to add a financial aspect to this story because it's what we're about, Kieran. But we heard the announcement today that there will be 60 or 65,000 people at Wembley for the final, for the semi-finals as well, possibly. But just over the weekend, Kieran, a couple of days ago, we saw UEFA threatening to take the semi-final and the final away from Wembley if the UEFA members attending the games were made to go into any form of quarantine, and saying that those games would go to Hungary, which is a country, as Ali pointed out, and as you said, has just recently publicly banned schools from talking about homosexuality. That wouldn't have been a good look from UEFA, as far as I'm concerned. But also what interests me financially is, what sort of compensation would UEFA, if UEFA were to turn around and say to Wembley, you're not having a semi-final or a quarter-final, whatever it is, and you're not having the final, would the FA lose out of that, or would UEFA have had to compensate them?
I think UEFA would have had to compensate them because there is no rational reason for the matches not taking place at Wembley. Mm. The FA has agreed to pay a hosting fee, so clearly that would have to have been refunded. And I think there has been a bit of common sense taking place here as far as UEFA is concerned, because if you take a look at the non-British nations remaining in the tournament, only Turkey were on the red list, and Turkey have been knocked out. Yeah. I've got Turkey in my sweep, so that was almost guaranteed. So what people can do is I think the quarantine relation, the quarantine rules for countries on the amber list are slightly more relaxed, so we should be able to bring people in. But I think one of the sticking points was the UEFA family.
Mm.
Broadcasters and commercial partners, 2,500 of them.
I know.
Yeah, that's that. You know, I've had a few partners. I'll rephrase that.
although you don't need to, Kieran, because both sentences are true in different ways.
Yes. So it does seem an awful lot of people who are on the gravy train here getting tickets for the semi-finals and the final. But it is great that potentially 60 to 65,000 people yeah. can attend. And what is a little bit strange is that UEFA have made it clear that at least 1,000 supporters from each of the teams that make up the last four are going to attend, which is great. So that fans can travel to matches, which I think is fantastic. You know, clearly there will be implications in terms of quarantine and you know, public health is important, but it's two steps forward, one step back, as always.
Yeah, it's interesting. I spoke to a journalist about this threat from UEFA to take the final away from England. And he said, I 100% guarantee it won't happen. The FA and the government will cave in because Boris Johnson has made a manifesto commitment to hosting the 2030 World Cup in the UK. And he won't run the risk, A, of pissing UEFA off at this stage of the game, and B, he'll want to be out there shaking hands with as many UEFA officials as possible in an attempt to get that tournament to this country.
Yeah, well, I hope he sanitizes before and after.
I don't think, even before the pandemic, I think most people who meet Boris Johnson would hope that, Kieran, to be perfectly honest, especially the females. And here we are, Kieran, look, just 20 minutes away from kickoff. I'm genuinely excited. If it gets anywhere near that Denmark game, I genuinely got emotional after that Denmark game.
It was a reminder of why we love football.
Yes.
And we've not had too many of those in the tournament.
And why it needs fans. Although Ali did rather unfairly point out, as I said in the tweet, that I've drunk enough lager in my life to make me at least 10% Danish. So it's one of those comments your wife makes when you have to just acknowledge it and go, yeah, it's funny and also sadly terribly true. If you would like to make a small monthly contribution to our pod, then that would be very kind of you. And you can do so by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. Our next pod on Monday is our questions pod. And if you have any questions you like answered on the show, then email us questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, we'll try and get you a picture of Findlay playing music on his new squeaky armadillo. Squeaky armadillo. What sort of shop in Sussex sells squeaky armadillos?
Well, you look hard enough, Kevin. It's amazing what you can find.
You don't even have to look hard in Sussex. That's the problem. You can't move in the lanes in Brighton for shops selling squeaky armadillo. Antique squeaky armadillos, only £95. Ooh, says the Baroness. That sounds nice. I shall hand you over to Kieran and say our normal goodbye.
Right. Well, thanks, folks, for all your feedback. And remember, the podcast will always be free as long as Kevin and I are associated with it.
Absolutely, yes.
So, and one other thing to point out, we do have some merchandise. If ever you fancy a Price of Football T-shirt, they are still available. All the mugs have gone, but I've got one of the T-shirts, and actually they're they're better than I thought they were going to be. So you're more than welcome to support the show in any way, shape or form. For Patreon, it can be as little as £1 a month, or just give us a 5-star review, say something nice about us on that Apple icon, on the podcast item, and that helps us in the charts, and you're helping, and you'll always have us for free. So don't worry about any rumours to the contrary.
Mm, absolutely. And I got a really nice Fresh Prince of Hilaire t-shirt yesterday, which is a lovely picture of Vince on the front. It's very nice. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you. We'll see you soon. Enjoy your game tonight with your English, Scottish, Croatian, or from the Czech Republic.
Yeah, the Baroness is from Edinburgh, so I have to behave myself.
Of course. Good luck, Baroness and Findlay.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of football.